I'd like to call the Planning Commission for Thursday, January 12th to order. Tonight, we're going to discuss most of this Montessori Country School. We have a little bit of business ahead. I guess that's the only thing really on our agenda. Does anyone have any conflicts with that? No? No. Okay. And so we'll start with the minutes from October 5th and the 13th. So anyone have a chance to look at them? Push a button, yeah.
I need somebody to shut off. All right, great. I notice in the commissioner's president, John isn't mentioned, but he's, and I knew he had to leave at 7, but he's actually got some business here in terms of parts of motions. It seems like he should be in the minutes. He should be shown as an attendee. See what I'm saying, Jane? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, I said the wrong date. Yeah, the 5th. Page 104, the first page. Okay, good.
Anything else?
I'll move that we approve the minutes for the 5th.
All in favor? Aye. How about the 13th? Anything on the 13th? Mike wasn't here, so maybe we have to hold those over, Jane. We only have three of us. Okay. So the Montessori Country School is a conditional use permit, I guess, and a site plan review?
That's correct.
That's correct, okay. Do we want the architect to speak first, or did you want to, Kelly, have something to say about it? Or?
I think I'd like to make an introductory.
Okay, so I think we're ready. I guess the one other thing, let me do one thing first. No one else is here about something else, you know, something that's not on the agenda, some other issues? No, okay, good. And then I think, do people in the public want to speak on this topic? Yes, okay, so we'll, I don't know when we should do that. I think we should have an introduction first and go over that, and then we'll have the public, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Have those who wish to speak signed up that way back there so we know how to parcel out time? How many wish to speak? Only two? That'll be quick, thank you.
So why don't we get started?
Yes. I'm Kelly Dayara, planner for the city of Bainbridge Island. The Montessori Country School is the applicant seeking site plan and design review and conditional use permit approval. The school seeks to expand the Arrow Point campus to accommodate a student population of 146 and 18 staff. The expansion includes 6 new buildings, modification to the existing parking lot, and the access drive. The project has had several public meetings, including a public participation meeting and 3 design review board meetings. The application is subject to state environmental policy review. 2 public comments were received on the application as discussed in the staff recommendation. A SEPA mitigation, a mitigated determination of non-significance, was issued on December 21st, 2016. The SEPA appeal period expired on January 4th, and no appeals were received. The application is before the Planning Commission for recommendation, and then we'll go to the hearing examiner for decision.
Okay. And then there's a couple of amendments to your staff recommendations that were sitting on the desk, right? A couple
of changes. That's correct. From the staff, conditions I've recommended that for condition 9, that condition 9D be stricken. It has to do with what was termed to be a new toddler play area south of the existing building, and they're not. The applicant isn't doing anything new there. They're just removing a wire fence and reestablishing a fence line within the landscape buffer. So that condition had to do with protection for the landscape buffer and having them put up a chain link fence along that buffer during construction to protect it. So I've recommended that condition be stricken. And also I had an error where I referred to the east boundary versus the west boundary. So I'm just reversing east and west on condition 9E.
Okay. Thank you. Russ, would you like to say a few words?
I'm Russ Hamlet, architect for the project, and I'm going to have Megan Scottheim, head of school, do a brief summary of the motivations for doing the project.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Megan Scottheim, and I am the head of school of Montessori Country School. I've been there for 24 years as a parent, a teacher, and now as head of school. But Montessori Country School has been on the island for over 44 years. It originally started in Westport, Madison in 1972 in a barn with about 8 students, and it quickly outgrew that and moved to the Arrow Point campus 40 years ago. It was started by Julie Reinierson and Dorothy King, and they, with their inspiration, the school now serves 130 children, birth through 6th grade. The majority of those children live on Bainbridge Island. We have several families who commute from Kingston, Indianola, and Paulsboro. We have 18 staff, which will stay the same in the new school, and the majority.
So currently you have 2 campuses?
Yes. So we have programs for parents and infants. We have programs for toddlers. The bulk of our program is preschool and kindergarten, which serves at currently 66 students. And then we have our elementary campus, which is on High School Road, that serves 42 students right now. The dreaming and planning for this began 6 years ago when we needed more classrooms for the children on our waiting lists, and our parents asked that we create a space where they could spend time together and develop relationships and create a community that helps them to support and raise their children here on the island. In 2012, we assumed leadership of Voyager Montessori Elementary School, which is located on High School Road. So that changed our designs and our dreams to include the elementary program. We purchased the necessary land, and just this past summer, we sold the High School Road property to the Bainbridge Island Child Care Centers, and they will be moving their Big Kids program to that location, something we're very excited about, to know that children will continue in that spot. This new campus allows us to enroll the children on our waiting lists. It, by bringing our programs together, we can encourage the multi-age connections and care that the Montessori method supports. It allows cross-level staff collaboration now that we will all be on one campus together. And not a minor point, it reduces the driving of many of our families who now drive children to both campuses on the island. As a school, we place a high value on the environments that surround our children. We value simplicity, beauty, and an active engagement with the natural world. I am excited and very eager for this campus. I think it's going to be an island gem. And I think that the design created by Studio Hamlet is wonderful and beautiful, and I'm excited for you to see it. I would love to talk to you about Montessori, but I imagine that other people would like to move on with business, so I won't go too much into the Montessori method for you tonight, but happy to talk to you about it further if you have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Brandon Hogue, and I work at Studio Hamlet, and I will run through the project as proposed in the design documents. So this is a basic aerial view of the property. It's a little dark to see, but anyway, and then a street elevation of the existing conditions. It's hard to see, but the boundary line is in there, and you can see a lot of the land is forested. And this is the landscape plan that indicates, it shows the buildings and the landscape buffers and some internal landscaping. And that's the west portion of the site, and this is the east portion, which is downhill, which remains basically undeveloped and
retains the existing forested condition.
On the east half, is that showing additional trees planted in the buffers?
Yeah, that's right. To meet the buffer requirements, for the landscaping requirements. And the same would go for the areas up in these buffers as well, especially with the evergreen trees. And so this is the architectural site plan showing the overall site. And I will, this is the, again, the west, the west portion. And is there a pointer? Oh, this points. All right, I see it. So this is the existing school building, which will remain and is not part of the proposal. It's basically remain the same, and where the preschool program will continue. And after that, the new buildings, building 2, 3, 4, and 5, and 6, move up along the site and are arranged in terms of the grades of the children. So this is the primary classrooms, and this is actually the administrative building with a commons room. And then moving up here, this is the elementary building with two different classrooms. This also has two different classrooms in it. And then this is a art classroom building, and then this is a future classroom for more elementary, depending on enrollment. So we're actually not proposing to build that immediately. And this is so the buildings are arranged in terms, again, they're arranged as graduating across this site, moving with the grades of the children as it goes, and also arranged to create outdoor spaces that the buildings are related to. This is an existing playground area to the east of the existing building, which will remain for the preschool and the primary programs. And then the area here, which will be new playground area for the elementary program. And then this area is a green where the kids can also have as a play field. And then so as far as the new driveway and parking, this is the proposed entrance, which is actually in the same place as the existing entrance, so we're not changing that. And then the new exit, it's a one-way circulation, and so it goes all the way up, and the exit is up on the north end of the site, whereas the existing exit, it's also a one-way circulation now. It's around here right now, so we have increase the separation between those. It's a little easier to see there. Increase the separation distance between those access points, which helps for safety and entering the street and exiting the street, and just for general safety and ease of the vehicular circulation. And what we've also done too is separate the parking spaces out from the drive aisle, which the drive aisle stays on this side, and we've got separate. Sorry, I keep hitting that button.
Brandon, a question.
Yes.
The new exit that's on the north end of the property, how close is that to the driveway for the residents that's just north of the property?
Well, the next property to the north is actually undeveloped, I believe. Let's see. Well, there's a strip of, the new property, our property comes here like this, and then there is a strip of undeveloped land there.
Right.
The next property after is developed, and I think their driveway is right here. So
that strip is an access easement for the property to the
this property.
East of it.
Yes, it was kept for that purpose as an access point for this property if it were to ever be developed. So does that answer your question? Exactly how far it is? I'd say it's right here. So I'd say it's at least 80 feet or so. I'm sorry, I don't have the dimensions on me. Do you need to know exactly, or is that a good enough?
Yeah.
Okay. So we did a lot of work and with the site plan, especially the parking areas and vehicular areas, to do as much as we can to alleviate the issues with traffic that can occur with the drop-off and pickup of students. So trying to maintain a good flow through the site. Also, what we've done is, along with the one-way drive aisle, there's also two different areas of pickup and drop-off areas that correspond to the different grades, the different programs, which also occur at different times. This would be as a pickup drop-off area here, which is basically a separate lane for temporary parking, which is totally separated from the normal drive aisle. So if there are cars parked to pick up or drop off students, other cars can continue to flow through the site and not be stopped by that, which as it is now, that happens. So I think we've addressed that pretty well. We also had a internal traffic study done to corroborate our design and to really look closely at how the class times are staggered and numbers of students and how the whole thing functions in general. And that traffic study does indicate that what we've designed is working, should work very well.
But there's no buses that go to this site, right?
No buses. It's all student and parent drivers.
And so you're saying that the start times are staggered so that it's not as much traffic at once.
That's right. And the start and stop times, the class times are staggered. So that's the main features of the site and the composition of the buildings and related to the vehicular areas. And so I'll just run quickly through some of the other drawings. You can see some of the architecture here. The buildings are fairly simple, mostly shed roofs, single story, very simple architecture. There's most of the buildings have porches, covered porches on the outside to provide nice outdoor areas for the children, and those also relate then to the landscape areas beyond. And so these are just site sections showing the relative relationships between the buildings, the new buildings, and this is a rendering from an aerial view. Again, the existing building is this one here, and so the new buildings as they work up the site, so it's a view looking to the northeast, and then a bit more of a bird's eye view. And so you can see the porch areas with the students hanging out there. What I would like to show you. Do you have any other questions I could answer at this time?
No, thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Russ, were you going to say something too, or is that it? That's it. Okay. So the people who would like to speak tonight, are you pro or against this? Comments? Okay. Then we should like to hear those. Can you state your name, please?
My name is Denise McDonald. I live on the adjacent southwest corner of the playground. And first and foremost, thanks for letting me come in and provide my comments.
So to the south of this park?
Southwest corner of the playground, yeah.
Can we get a site plan up, please?
About 150 feet from that southwest corner.
Thank you.
Roughly. And my intent tonight is to mitigate any concerns so the Montessori can move forward and commence work on the expansion of the project. It sounds very exciting.
Can you please pull your mic down?
Okay, sorry. I want, in my CEPA comments I submitted back in July, I expressed some concerns and considerations related to the expected increase in noise associated with the increase in students and staff. And so tonight I'm here to respectfully challenge the assessment in completing, that you did in the approval process regarding the noise levels associated with this increase. At my estimation, it was 76%, but that was a swag based on the number of heads that would be added. So my home office is approximately 100 feet from the southwest corner of the children's play area, like I said, and between the hours of 7 and 5 p.m. each day, Monday through Friday, and on an ongoing basis, I have conference calls and clients that are on the phone with me and routinely in play. And this increased noise level will have an impact on the quality and effectiveness of my work, which in turn could impact my income. Per my conversation with Kelly just not too long ago, what she mentioned to me in her assessment of this process is that she had estimated the decibels, noise level of decibels was going to be somewhere around 60 to 65, which, according to the Washington Administrative Code, is something to the equivalent of office noise. The impact of my home, she said, with the windows closed, would be that of a dishwasher. So it's really important to note that office environment noises, I think I'm challenging that noise level because it is an office noise level. And when you look at what the Washington Administrative Code says about how loud is too loud, if you're in a residential area, the maximum amount of noise coming into a property is 55 decibels from another residential area and 57 decibels from a commercial area. So when I look at their chart or what are the decibel levels for everyday noises, I'm estimating this to be more around that the noise of a lawnmower, and that's even probably less loud. And that's estimated, according to the Washington Administrative Code, at 100 decibels. So I'm just strongly challenging the estimation of decibels associated with the noise. What has been cited in the Washington Administrative Code and other sources, and respectfully request consideration to conducting some type of noise abatement test, which the Washington Administrative Code has set standards, and adoption of any of the solutions that I might have proposed in my SEPA comments, which were really around sound absorption and landscape architecture that could help deflect the noise associated with the increased headcounts associated. I've even put types of different trees and plants and things like that are known for really, deflecting the noise associated with areas like this. So, thank you.
Oh, can I ask one question?
Oh, sure.
Currently, you believe it's a problem as it exists, or just because of the increase, you think will be a problem?
It's going to be the increase. I mean, we bought this property and we just moved in the end of October, and we built it knowing that there was a Montessori school there and we were absolutely fine. I was a little surprised here, and I might have misunderstood what you said around the number of students in the school. I thought it was somewhere around 46, but you said it was 66. So is that a difference from year over year? And was that what it was when you filed your permit?
We shouldn't have.
Okay, yeah.
Unless we can hear you.
Anyway, when we moved in, we were fine with the noise levels associated with that and the amount of head count, because we were aware of how many kids were there. But now with the increase almost, like I said, quite a bit. So.
Thank you.
I've got a question, Mary. I'd like some clarification. Can somebody put a pointer where your office is on this graphic up here? Where is exactly your office on that chart?
There's an aerial photograph that might show it.
It's an old photo, I think. They don't even have the house.
Yeah. House.
So it's about, we measured it. It's about 150 feet from the southwest corner, the border of the playground there.
And this is the existing toddler playground. And do the new students use the toddler playground? I mean, the older kids?
Kelly, is that what?
I can't see where your dot is. Oh, there it is. I see. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't really gauge exactly where it is, but yeah, I mean, it's right off the corner of that corner of the property.
So, excuse me, but the existing playground, I think what I read, there's no more, there's no addition to that. There's no more students there than currently.
Well, I mean, in my, from my understanding, when I originally submitted the SEPA comments, the headcount I thought was somewhere quoted around 46. So tonight it sounds like it's increased, which is interesting because we've noticed a kind of an increase in the noise. But you know, for the kids that are there or that were there last year, you know, in the fall when we were moving in, it didn't seem too disruptive, but my understanding is that is going to more than double now, right? The total, and how the noise comes across that area, I don't know why, but it's just loud, unfortunately. So,
thank you. I will ask more questions. Would you like to speak, ma'am? Are you? Yes. Now, who was next? I thought you were. Did you say you wanted to speak? I thought you, yes.
My name is Patty Christensen, and I am the daughter of Dorothy King, who is the founder of the school. And I was the head of school for 27 years, and Megan took over the leadership when I retired in July of 2013. I'm really excited about this project. It's a dream of the school for a very long time to have the full spectrum. I think it will be one of very few schools in Washington State that runs from infancy through sixth grade. And we've been here for a very long time. And I think over the years, you know, certainly in my 27 years, there have been times that we've worked with neighbors, we've worked with the park department, and I believe there is a way to make this work so that there isn't an impact for the neighbors. I'm really excited to see the design of the new driveway. I think that's going to take care of a huge issue. So I'm just here to say I'm excited and I hope to see it go forth. Thank you.
Thank you. So, well, let's hear from the architect first. And then, did you have a response kind of to the sound? Can you stand up?
So it's actually, I wanted to address one of the conditions in the staff report. That's number 9. I wanted to suggest or request that in lieu of the chain link fence that is mentioned here, that instead of chain link fence as a cost saving measure, that we go with all orange plastic fencing to delineate the area of the limits of disturbance for the site, a combination of orange plastic fencing as well as the filter fencing where that's required for the erosion control plan. Not only installing the chain link fence in advance of any construction activity would create a pretty large disturbance on its own, so. Also, it's a very expensive thing to maintain for the life of the construction. Putting a request in that we look at removing the chain link portion and in lieu of chain link, go with orange plastic fencing.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kia Miko. I'm the project landscape architect, and I just want to address some of your concerns. When we had the meeting at the school, I remember hearing those concerns, and in the planting plan, we really did try to address them. We have more than 300% of the required tree retention units on site. The whole eastern part of the property is not being changed at all in terms of existing trees, but we're adding a huge number of additional buffer trees as required, and a great many of them are intended to help mitigate the noise concerns in that corner of the property. We do have a drain field easement there that we have to work around a little bit, which made it a little more challenging to plant buffer trees, but we did really try to put quite a few cedars and huckleberry to help mitigate the noise concerns. I just wanted to add that. Thank you.
For the applicant, I mean, is there a desire to solve this problem? I mean, if it becomes a problem, or if it takes a wooden fence, or if it takes more planting, I mean, is there a willingness to work with this owner over time? And, you know, it would, I mean, I think that would be the solution, really, is if it's a problem. It's far enough away, it sounds like. It doesn't sound like there's a lot of new students in that toddler area. It sounds like somebody could be creative and come up with a solution, whether it's hardscaping of some kind or more planting. But it does seem like it should be addressed. This is a neighborhood residential area, and it is a school, so I think we should, I don't know what the other members think, but I think that they should try to work together if there's a problem to try to solve it. I mean, there's a lot of distance there, a lot of trees there, you would think. I mean, even a visual screen does a lot for sound. I used to live by the highway for a long time, and if you can't see the cars, they don't sound as loud somehow as if you see them rushing by. So if you see the kids all over the trees, maybe it's worse than if you don't see the kids. I don't know. But
yeah, well, I had a clarification question, because I'm trying to follow this somewhat bouncing ball here, and if I understand correctly, the new students are the elementary school students who are coming from the former campus on High School Road. So they're the new ones. So the toddlers haven't increased. So what am I missing here? I mean, they may increase, obviously, if enrollment increases, but...
That was actually the point that I was going to make, that it's not an increase in the number of children who will be on the playground at the same time. You're right that the increase in students is going to be mainly those elementary students, and their playground is further to the north. It's separated from where our current primary children will. There's the line there is a hedge that separates the preschool playground from the elementary playground, which is further to the north. And those children will be on the playground at a different time than the primary children. So we're not increasing the numbers of children on the playground. We're not going to increase another 40 kids out playing all at the same time on the playground.
I've just got a question. I'm curious about the timing. How many times or how long during the day will there be elementary children playing on?
They have a 45-minute recess in the middle of the day. Right now, it is from 12:15 to 1 o'clock.
And that's the only time that they're there on that playground?
Once a week, they also have fitness. But now we expect to use Battle Point Park more for those fitness classes. Then they wouldn't be on the playground for that. They might be on the green in front of their class. But otherwise, no, it's 12:15 to 1 o'clock. And our primary students are currently on the playground from about 10:45 to 11:15 every day. Our toddlers, we have 14 toddlers, and they have free access to go in and out all morning, but not all of them at the same time. Usually several of them at a time are out.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other public comment? I had a few questions about the conditions, but does anyone else? I'm a little confused by this forested area. Well, first of all, about the tree retention plan. So it shows a lot of trees being saved, and it shows a lot of trees in the drain field area. But then you don't want to preserve them with a covenant. So are those trees preserved or not preserved?
There is some confusion about that. The intent, so there's a primary drain field and a reserve drain field. And as you know, the reserve drain field is only used if the primary goes out. The drain field, the design they have actually does preserve quite a few trees, but the stormwater regulations prohibit a covenant from being enacted over those drain fields. So it's not that there isn't the intent to preserve them, and it's not as if they couldn't, for example, do some kind of private easement or propose to retain them, and they are proposing to retain them. It's just that official covenant cannot be recorded according to stormwater regulations.
The health department regulations.
Stormwater.
Mm-hmm. And the but I thought the new tree regulations state that if you have a site plan review, which this is, right?
Yes.
And we show trees to be preserved, and if they later are cut down, they have to pay triple damages on the trees. And so the intent must be that we're keeping all of these trees, and I want the applicant to understand means they have to keep these trees.
They've marked the trees that they're required to retain, and those are within the landscape buffers. So this covenant that the development engineer is referring to, the declaration of covenant for a stormwater system, it doesn't have anything to do with required tree retention in terms of the municipal code.
Do you think that's true, Josh? I mean, I thought we did these site plan reviews and we decided whether a tree was required to be saved or not. If it shows in the site plan review, it has to be saved. If they're so preventing to the public that that tree is going to be saved, then it has to be saved. And you can't come back later and say, well, we had to cut down that 3-foot cedar because it was in the way of the drain field.
They're showing the required retention in the landscape buffer. They are not required to retain the trees in the drain field. It's just their intent to do so. But they're not required to retain them.
I don't believe that's true by the reading of the code. So I just want to try to get that point clear or not. Because thought the whole point of we're trying to say that if you're not going to keep a tree, if you don't require to keep a tree, don't show it. Because we have this trouble with the public where you show these trees and then all of a sudden they're cut down when the drain field gets built. And then we say, well, you showed them all here, now they're gone. What's the deal?
Right. Well, there's a difference between identifying it as retained and intending to be retained,
okay,
and required to be retained.
Okay. So none of these trees are required to be or intended to be retained?
The ones specifically in the drain field?
Yes.
That's our full intention to save those. We have the septic design as a drip irrigation design. So
the trees?
Exactly. So we intend to save all the trees in the drain field area, and that actually keys into one of the other conditions that is a bit of a problem, which 5I, which is related to stormwater, and the stormwater scheme, half of it or part of it on the eastern portion is relying on dispersion into the forested area, and I guess that requires a covenant to protect the forested area. This condition is saying that the drain field area should not be included in that covenant because of the restrictions of the areas and other areas that are not forested. The calculations of that dispersion it required that a certain portion of the proposed drain field area be included in that in order to meet the dispersion qualifications. And I guess if we're retaining the trees in the drain field area, it seems that it should be allowed to be part of the forested area, the existing forested condition.
Because this drawing C2 shows most of the reserve and like a third of the drain field in the forested covenant area.
That's right. So the third in the.
Yes,
not very well there.
That's correct. And that's why we specifically addressed that in that condition, because, as I said, it's prohibited.
By who?
By stormwater regulations with the Department of Ecology.
Not the Health Department, the Department of Ecology.
That's correct.
Here's Adam. This is what you have to say.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. Yeah, no problem. Adam Wheeler with Brown Wheeler Engineers. I guess the way I viewed it was that the intent of setting aside the area was to save the trees, but not necessarily limit the use of that area. If we can install the drip irrigation system in there and not affect the trees, it seems like we're not being, negatively impacted by actually saving more area of trees. So I guess I was a little surprised by that particular condition, because we need to set aside 65% of that eastern basin to make our storm drainage system work to meet the regulations. I guess I didn't see anywhere in the code that said that you couldn't have a drain field, a drip irrigation drain field that saved the trees in there.
Right.
It's my reading.
Okay. And so I don't have a problem with any of these things other than it doesn't seem clear. And I would like it to be more clear in that that's really the intent, because so many times you see the drain fields, just somebody goes in there and wrecks the whole area. And we don't have any control whether you're doing that or not by this. We don't know that you're not, I guess. I'd like the condition to say that you are going to protect the 65% area.
Correct. Yeah. We would need to save those trees that is in that shaded area. Those would have to be saved,
right,
if we're going to meet that stormwater requirement of the code.
It doesn't, because it excludes the drain fields areas. So if we just take out that part of the line and say.
So I guess that's the issue. Is we contend that you can install a drain field in that area.
Right. I think you could.
And then if we couldn't cut the tree down to put the drain field in there. We'd have to move the drain field.
Right.
Because in the end, all those trees go on a covenant.
Right.
And we're not allowed to cut them down.
But here it says you can't put a covenant on those trees. This condition says you can't.
Oop. Which one?
The I?
Yeah. Well, it just says that the drain field area can't be included in the covenant.
But the covenant does include the drain field area, according to this.
Oh.
Can we just reword that a little bit? And maybe if we leave it.
Yeah, because
that's what I was asking for.
Because the first inspection does say that we're going to have a covenant that protects that entire 65% area.
Well, it says the first final building, which I didn't know what that meant. I assume that's like your last inspection. I would like it to be your first inspection.
Oh, first after the final.
You don't want to do the covenant after you've done the work and cut down all the trees, then you say, "Well, protect."
Right? Yeah. No. That. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Say the first building permit.
I would think that you could do it when you set up your fencing inspection for clearing the property.
And so the idea of chain link fence. I mean, the chain link fence idea came about because people can move those plastic fences easily.
Right.
And so, you know, it has to do with trust. I mean, we have to trust that you put it in a spot and leave it in a spot, and then I'm fine with the plastic. It does seem like everyone here has intent to try to save the trees, but we've just had trouble before with things moving.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask a question, sort of looking at it from the other side. Do you have an estimate of how many trees will be cut down? I mean, how...
I guess where the buildings are, is it forested now?
Yeah, that northern, especially the northern building, is mostly, currently, it's alder. Because the way the property is kind of shaped, that northern part's been recently acquired, and that whole lot actually was logged about 20 years ago. I think that's right. So the trees in that area are actually fairly small. The larger trees are further on the site. But I don't have kind of a count of how many trees would need to come down.
So I think we're all on the same page what we want, but I don't think the conditions say that.
No, they don't.
We change them, so they say what we want.
The Planning Commission is making a recommendation, and you can, of course, make a recommendation to change that condition.
Well, I'd like to have the condition so that we can recommend approval of the project, I mean, the other way around. So I'd like to alter the condition if we can now so that we can feel like we can vote on it. And then we would present, you know, one that's been changed.
The Planning Commission's role is to make a recommendation. The Planning Commission does not make a decision on this.
Right.
The hearing examiner does.
To make that recommendation, we would like to change it.
Well, we can make a recommendation back with a recommendation about new language on that section.
Or we can say we don't want to make a recommendation until the language is changed, and then we can recommend this approved.
Yeah, that would require us to go back and revisit this. So if
we
can
do that
in additional, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm suggesting we ought to supply the record, what you would like to see in terms of the language, and then we go from there.
Perhaps.
That's what we usually do, is we usually change these conditions a bit, and then we decide if we're going to approve them or not, if we're going to recommend their approval to the hearing examiner. That's what we usually do.
So if I might suggest, perhaps what would achieve your goal would be to recommend that the last sentence in condition 5I, which reads the proposed drain field area and reserve drain field area should not be included in the covenant, be deleted.
Be deleted, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there's another spot where it talks about the covenant, and I think the covenant should just, the forested area, should be clear, the forested area is this area shown on C2. You know, that darkened area is the forested area.
Which other reference to the
covenant? Well, I mean, it was unclear. Is this the only thing that talks about a covenant? I thought
there's actually a few different cases where we do have to record some things, and there is a covenant for the stormwater system operation and maintenance, which is a separate thing. It's a different issue.
I guess maybe just in the SEPA condition one, I was thinking that first SEPA condition should mention the forested area. It just talks about the buffers. Because, you know, that's talking about storage of materials and parking construction vehicles, all that I think should apply to the forested area that's being covered.
I think that's what the forested area covenant, the protection of the forested area covenant is really, it's supposed to be there for anyways, just protection of those areas anyway. So I don't know if it needs to be one of the SEPA conditions.
And then if that could say prior to the first building inspection, not the first final. I mean, so because we're intending to have this marked out at the beginning, right? These non-buildable and non-right. And does anyone have a problem with them doing chain link or not chain link? Right.
I
think we would be willing, if we have that ability, to say that it's okay if it's a plastic fencing, not a single plastic strip, but, you know, plastic fencing of some kind.
Yeah, and it could even be in with T-posts that are a lot harder to remove than just stakes.
Is that all right to do that, Josh? Or is that a bad precedent?
Well, the code allows for either one based on the director's discretion. We have had problems in the past, especially with these larger projects, with contractors mowing down the netting, not abiding by it or moving it because it's in their way.
Right.
Whereas the chain link fence has been, and that was one of the things that have come out of the tree committee and come out of the planning commission in the past, that we need to be protecting these areas, these buffers, these critical areas, not encroaching in those the critical root zones. And so for some of these larger projects, we have and maybe it's a combination depending on, maybe the high use areas that are closer in, maybe we can look at that and give the director some discretion as to what areas really need to be chain link versus what areas can simply be the construction netting.
Right. Which gets to my other thing, which is, doesn't seem like there's a very good diagram that shows, there's a list of areas that are protected, but I would like to see a diagram included that shows.
Okay, yeah, that.
Fences go, and maybe you could then make the recommendation of where the chain link fence is near the parking areas and the building. And of course, way down on the site would be the other.
It's not exactly what is stated in the conditions here, but this is the temporary erosion and sediment control plan, which does indicate a limit to the area of disturbance and also silt fencing for control of sediment. And it would be something like that. This is part of the building permit, but it's not necessarily part of the site plan review documentation. So, anyway.
Wouldn't that be a useful document, Josh, that we should have part of this?
Yes, we can, and I think, you know, maybe the condition could be changed to indicate that at the time of building permit submittal, that they provide a protection plan that would then be approved by the director. For which areas would need to have chain link versus which areas would have the orange netting. And then that, you know, the installation of those fences gets put in, you know, first thing before actual, you know, clearing, grading, et cetera, goes on. Far too often we've had, that's where we've ran into issues in the past is during that initial clearing phase and grubbing phase.
And it's also one of the conditions is after the fence is installed, it's to be inspected before we even have building permits. So get a chance to check it all and make sure it's in the right places.
So can we add that? Or change that condition? So which condition would that be in?
That is condition 9.
If we add the forested area and then add a drawing that shows where the fences go, whether they're chain link or plastic netting.
If I might ask, are you recommending any change to the locations of the chain link fence, or you're unable to determine where?
I think without a diagram is pretty hard. I mean, we could go over it right now if we want to try, but I think might be better with the director looking at it or you guys looking at it and making a determination.
Okay. We just go with chain link and all applications.
It's a really big site, I think is what they're saying, and therefore expensive if it's in an area that's not likely to be near construction traffic.
Construction.
Is that what you're saying? Is that just too expensive and it's too big an area?
To just have chain link rather than any other kind of netting? Or
it is expensive.
What would be your estimation as to the how much of it that requires protecting, how much would be chain link, and how much would be orange fencing?
Just according to the current conditions, as proposed?
What would do the job? And the job is not, you know, not to let somebody with their pickup truck park in the forested area or park and, you know, back into these trees with the bulldozer.
I mean, I can't say I can't control what the contractors do. You know, fencing is fencing, but I mean, I think a chain link fence could be moved as well. So I'm not sure if,
you know,
chain link fence solves the problem, but
I think this is overkill. Way. I mean, I think that as architects on the project, you could make a reasonable estimate of where the chain link fence should be and where plastic fencing can be, and let's go with that and just move on.
Because that's what I think we should do.
I think that's fine. I mean,
right. I think I would accept what you recommend. Right. And I just don't.
I think, yeah, I guess I wanted it to be the other way around, where it's not mostly chain link fence and then just a small section of orange plastic fence.
I think
fence.
I would leave that to you.
Okay.
With knowing what the intent is, that clearly a chain link fence is harder to move and harder to back through.
Yeah, sure.
And I think it's going to be reviewed by the director, you're saying.
Right. So there's checks and balances on it, so I think it's fine.
Thoughts? Any last chance for public comment? Are you? Do we need to? Are you feeling better about the sound, that people seem cognizant of it.
Kelly, you know, we just passed an ordinance on low-impact development, and as I've read through this, it looks like this proposal really takes into account, I assume, the driveway. If I read it correctly, the driveway is not paved. It's a gravel driveway?
So the driveway is paved from the edge of the right-of-way on Arrow Point Drive for a certain distance, and it was a little longer distance than typically because we felt that there would be a lot of traffic. So we didn't want a lot of gravel out, but essentially, no, it is not a paved parking lot.
Where the cars are parking, that inner little circle, is that paved or gravel?
It is not.
It's not paved.
That's correct.
Okay. In this ordinance, in terms of low impact development, has this been involved in the discussion in setting this up? You've used this ordinance that has been passed and tried to comply with the conditions that are in this ordinance for low impact development?
Unfortunately, I'm the project planner, and so I don't have my development engineer, but I think probably Adam Wheeler, the applicant's engineer, could respond to that question.
Because it technically isn't subject to that ordinance as it was passed after this is in the works, right?
Well, I understand that, but I'm just curious in terms of, I'm sort of looking to see, is our ordinance going to give us the kind of low-impact development that we want, and how close are we with this?
I mean, I think in some ways this is the best-case scenario. If you protect 65% of the property, we're not going to get that very often. You know, that's probably like the best type of low-impact development you could do, mm-hmm. is preserve 65% of the property for infiltration. I don't know if Adam has something to say.
Did you have any further questions? Brendan Hogue would like to respond. Brendan Hogue would like to respond to your question, if that's okay.
Please.
In terms of low-impact development, that typically implies infiltration of stormwater, and that would be one of the main goals. In this case, we do have a geotechnical report that indicates that we can't infiltrate, so low-impact development is almost a moot point on this site. We are doing dispersion in the forested area of stormwater, which is a low-impact development technique, but in terms of infiltrating all the rainwater from the driveways, it's technically not possible on this site because of the types of soils that are present. We don't have the infiltration capacity.
But dispersion is a type of infiltration.
Right, but that's a separate, I was saying that's a separate part of, that's the eastern portion of the site. The western portion is a slightly different situation. It's also two different drainage patterns.
Do you have something to say? There's no direct question to you. No.
I think he described the situation pretty well. The soil on the site is, as we find in certain areas on the island, is really very shallow. And we're on the western part of the property. We're very constrained with the amount of area that we actually can do anything anyways. So we tried to leverage our ability more on the east side by saving that 65%. And it is, dispersion is a low-impact development practice. And it's used in situations like this where you don't have a nice infiltrative soil to put the water in. Instead, you put it in this thin layer over a great distance, and it accomplishes the same.
Do you think this would meet the new low-impact development regulations?
I think it would be really close. Yeah. I do.
I guess I have one other question for Kelly. So in your comp plan analysis, you were talking about the widening of the shoulder for pedestrians, or I wasn't pedestrians, what's the other term we use for other, not cars, but for bicycles? And I was just curious about it being gravel over, if it's for bikes, it didn't seem like gravel is the right type of widened shoulder for a bicycle, but I mean, so what's the intent of the widened shoulder along Arrow Point? Is for parking?
So, I'm sorry, could you?
I'm trying to find where I read.
I think it's probably the an engineer's condition, but basically if there was, so widening of Arrow Point Drive, I see. So it's condition 5D. Basically we look at what the requirements are based on the road classification. And so sometimes that'll call for a gravel shoulder. Sometimes it'll call for pavement and fog line. So it would be in the non-motorized transportation plan what that requirement was. Let me see if I can find that. So the non-motorized transportation plan requires a 3 to 5 foot width gravel shoulder.
It really calls for gravel shoulders, not paved shoulders.
Yes.
Yes, okay. My how squeaky wheels let that get through. Thank you. Nope. Any other thoughts? You want to make a motion?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and make a recommendation that we recommend approval of this site plan review, conditioned, I guess, on the two things that we talked about. I hope Jane or Kelly or somebody has gotten those down, right? One of them had to do with the fencing, whether it was plastic or chain link, and the other one had to do with this whole business of the covenant with the trees.
And the covenant on the whole, 65%.
Okay, so perhaps I'll try to summarize, say a recommendation for approval, provided that the condition related to fencing, that chain link versus orange construction fencing, be left to the discretion of the director.
Or that there's a diagram provided that shows what they intend to do and that it gets reviewed by the director.
And that the declaration of covenant include the...
Or we just strike that line that says except for the drain field. So the whole thing that shows on C2 has the protective covenant on it.
Okay, got it.
Strike on 6I. Area and reserved green field area should not be included in the covenant. That would just be taken out. Okay.
Got it.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second. Bill, any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So it passes, so thank you all for coming, and hopefully that was painless. Yes, maybe a little. So, what else is on the agenda? Do we have one? So, any new and old business? So, I guess we're going to just adjourn. I don't think I'm going to start. Planning Commission is adjourned. Thank you.
What the hell are you doing here? Do you have a child in the Montessori school?